The following audio is from Park Church in Denver, Colorado. More information about Park Church is available online at parkchurchdenver.org.
So the question was, what would I say to a mom struggling with a child with a shopping cart?
Yeah, just like how would either, what would you say to her, or how would you approach that?
Right. Well, I feel like my opportunities to interact with non-believers is often just limited to the grocery store. So I always try to have my radar up when I'm in the grocery store looking for opportunities to just engage with people and be a gospel witness. And we'll sometimes even pray that the Lord will let me have fruitful conversations with the checkout gals that I know. But if I see a mom struggling with a child, I try to gauge where she's at. And if she's really overwhelmed, maybe just, if I'm close, just say, these are really difficult years. I've got 4 kids. I can relate. But hang in there. And you're doing a great job. You know, if she's not being a jerk and beating her kid up or anything. You're doing a great job. Especially if they're trying to get the child to obey, to go up and say, I think you're doing a great job. And you are really wise to be requiring your child, asking your child to obey. I mean, just whatever you can say in the moment. Encourage any good behavior that you see, any good mothering going on. Or if I was right next to the woman who's saying, but the cart says it, if I was right there, I might say, Ann, you're her mom, and it's good for kids to obey their moms. And little one, you should listen to your mama. She loves you. I mean, maybe because I have white hair, I feel bolder now to say things that I maybe wouldn't have done when I was up here.
I think that's as a peer mom, I don't feel like I can say that.
Yeah.
Like even just on social media, I belong to a mom group and this mom was like, is there a locking bag clip so I can lock this bag clip so my kid doesn't take out the frozen berry bottle anyway? And I wanted to kind of say, you guys have a rule that I can't open the freezer without asking me.
Yeah.
I didn't think of any way that I could say it, especially on social media, that I wouldn't be just make rules for your kids.
Right. Yes. And that's the limitation of social media. And you need to limit your time there because it's only so fruitful.
Yeah.
And invest that time with real people in real mom groups where you could meet one-on-one and talk about strategies.
And what would you say, though, if that was our child?
I would get right on their level, and I would, with firm, not hurting them, but they know I'm serious, and I would lower my voice and say, son, it is your job to obey mommy, and you need to sit in this cart now. And that posture would have already been demonstrated for them at home with fitting consequences. I think the key is you've got to spend enough time at home disciplining and training so that when you're in public, it's not coming out of nowhere. They know you mean business. It goes together. And like we talked about a few of the ladies in between sessions, as with potty training, you might have to have a boot camp where you realize, wow, they've really been fighting me in the grocery store. So you say, for the next week, we're going to stay home, and we're going to practice sitting in the cart game. And we're going to say, okay, we're going to pretend that it's cart time. The mommy says, sit in the cart. What are you going to do? And you actually make a game out of it and proactively train them. You can do that with sitting in the pew for church. You can do it with stopping when they call. You say, practice stopping so that when they go to run after the ball in the street, that's not the first time they've heard you say stop. It's the proactive training before the disobedience happens.
Or even on the drive to the store.
Yes, on the drive to the store. You know this is a temptation point for them to say, now listen, remember, you have to sit in the cart. And if you disobey, we're going to leave the store right away and we're going to go home and have a consequence. And you may have to do that a couple of times. It's really disruptive to your shopping. But it's very forming their character and their opinions. It's more important than getting the groceries.
If you think about, in a workplace, an employee is supposed to never be surprised if they get an employee evaluation and you raise an issue. They should know proactively. And so our children's discipline should not be a surprise. Now, the reality is kids will come up with things and you'll think, where did that even come from? How did that even come into your mind? But 80% of the things that you'll deal with, you can anticipate and then proactively be bringing up.
the one thing I don't know if you answered, this is not my question.
Okay,
so if you leave a store, or if I leave a pool, or you pull them out somewhere because of their disobedience, is that their disobedience, or I mean that their consequence?
Oh.
And like not doing something fun at home, or do you still spank them?
I would still spank them. And here's the thing.
Even though it's not right.
We say, do it right away or they'll forget what it's attached to. If your child at the pool, if you said, when we get home, I'll give you a cookie. When you got home, would they remember that? So they'll remember. I think we underestimate how much our kids would remember.
Okay, so it's still effective even though it's not.
I think
not
so, yeah. Okay. I mean, you know your own child, but
yes.
I think they remember more than we do.
Yes. My other question is, one of our children in particular, well, I think at this time they're all struggling with some first-time obedience, but one of them, like, really seems like he's deaf to his own name. And part of me wonders, like, okay, are you actually super busy some of the time? Like, you're just not paying attention. But I also know that there's times where you're, like, yelling his name, and he's just, like, doesn't listen. Like, how do you, any suggestions with dealing with that? And do you think that that's, like, a spankable offense, like, every time, like, listen, you're not listening,
right.
So we're just going to spank you, like, 70 times a day until you figure it out.
Well, I think it's both. Again, you know your child. Dr. Dobson helpfully said boys do tend to tune things out when they're playing and they're really distracted. And so it's really helpful to get down right where they can see you. Make sure if you have their attention, even if you have to hold their little cheek and say, Mommy needs you to go do this right now.
Yeah.
Okay, then if they tune you out, you know they heard you.
Yeah.
So make sure they hear the command.
I know my follow through has been super poor. Because physically, I'm just a little bit limited right now, so
yeah.
I feel like I'm like sitting from my chair, like barking.
Yeah.
And that doesn't really work.
Yeah.
Because I know, like, I think he is pretty distracted, but also it's like maybe our kids will respond once we finally give them a threat, and I think that's just a reflection of we have not been. Consistent.
Yes, that's
it's
right.
It's like
so
at one point we were, and then we became more lax.
And they are on to you.
Yeah.
And so the challenge for especially your husband. Until May 22nd, is to work on this because when you're nursing, you need him to respond to your voice.
And they're gonna know, like, oh, she can't do it.
Exactly. So right now is the time to, even though you feel most physically challenged, even if it means canceling some stuff and taking a few days to just stay home and focus on this. But think of Samuel, who when the Lord called him, he heard his voice. He went to Eli, two times, and then finally he realized God was calling him. If our kids don't learn how to hear our voice, they won't hear the voice of the Lord. So just remembering that spiritual principle is at play too.
Okay.
Anybody have any questions for our kids?
They came all the way from Kentucky to
answer. They're trying to earn their keep. They just some good ones.
I think I might have one. I think it might be for both parties. So I think I'm understanding correctly. You guys were homeschooling.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I think I'd like to hear maybe some feedback from the kids about maybe how it's been coming up, like knowing that there's also like public school and like private school, but like you're at home school, and like maybe you guys have like a co-op or something like that, but I think I'd just kind of like to explore some.
Yeah, so I started in private preschool and then charter school for first grade.
For kindergarten.
It was obviously a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed some of it. And there were things where the teacher was, I don't know, I just was doing the nursery rhymes and playing around and not getting my way all the time. But then it was more on your end just realizing that I wasn't being cultivated in the way that you thought I could be cultivated. So coming home and then being there 24/7 probably helped with a lot of the discipline things that the teacher couldn't deal with. Mm-hmm. When she's got 15, 20 students. And I remember some things, I was pretty headstrong. So I needed a little more of the right kind of attention. So that was helpful. But then transitioning to high school, I did dual enrollment for most of my high school. And that was really helpful, just getting the challenge of, okay, I've been in the home, but I'm starting to come up against these areas where mom isn't able to help as much. Not because she doesn't want to, but because she hands me the book and says, okay, here's what the problem says about that chemistry thing. But it wasn't always, we weren't able to get as much done. I didn't understand it as well. So having at that point, having you got me to a point where I could interact in the classroom in a way, but I needed other people in my life to help guide me in that season. But for elementary school, I didn't really benefit from being at home.
Do you all know what dual enrollment is?
So it's okay. Yeah. So it's being it's taking college level classes in high school. So some school some colleges do it. I did it at our local Bible college where Dad worked.
Oh, wow.
But some community colleges do them, and I think it's getting it's kind of taking off more in different areas.
So you're accelerating college. You're getting college knocked out while you're fulfilling high school.
Yeah.
Let me just add real quick. I'd still love to hear more of your feedback, but that context of us recognizing something that we've seen. You know, ultimately, the Bible's not dogmatic about exactly what that home education, I mean, home education, what that education would look like. What it is clear about is our responsibility to raise our children through the instruction of the Lord. And so throughout our lives, we partner with people in the instruction of our children. So, you know, we work with coaches, we work with Sunday school teachers, we, you know, work with people who teach our kids in a variety of settings, but we bear ultimate responsibility. And so anybody we are going to work with, we've got a responsibility for knowing who they are and what their character is and what they're teaching and doing follow through and making sure that what our kids are getting from them is ultimately in line with what we're going to teach. And anything that they're missing, we need to make sure we've got to teach it. We've got to supplement it. If the system we've landed on doesn't teach them biblical instruction, doesn't raise them in the fear and instruction of the Lord, we've got to come back and do that. If there's something they're teaching that's off, we've got to correct that. So what we just started realizing is there's an efficiency to teaching it ourselves. As opposed to doing all the vetting and follow-up with the people we're partnering with. And we definitely don't want to fall into a context where we're partnering, but we're really not tuned in. We don't know what they're learning. We're not doing the follow-through. So that's how we landed where we did. We've had friends who say, every year we're going to consider each child and their needs, and they've been in and out of public school and charter school and private school and homeschool. We found that to be a little overwhelming to do that much change, but you know, they found a way to do it. But they said at the end of the day, we're responsible. And if we're gonna do any of those models, we're gonna figure out who's there, what they're teaching, we're gonna do the follow through, we're gonna supplement anything they're not teaching because we have a responsibility. So.
Did you guys ever feel like you were missing out? Or do you enjoy being home?
I mean, I
connected
with friends.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest area is when you're stuck with people in school, there's something where you're forced to develop relationships. And so, I think we didn't do a lot of sports growing up. We did, like, camps. We didn't do regular sports or regular school. But we did, I think we've been able to develop relationships at church with friends a little. So, I think we were definitely spared a lot of the negative things that come with being stuck with people for your entire time, but there's some areas that I realize I probably didn't get some of the things that some of my peers have gotten in terms of lifelong friends. But I don't know, man, you guys have said that most of your friendships you have now were people you met in college and grad school, so there's still a lot going forward. But
I think we learned more in homeschool.
Yeah.
Because the teacher wouldn't have as much patience if we did public school or something.
And the other thing is, because we're just—it's just us and the material. There's not kind of the pressure, the peer pressure. Okay, I want to learn. These kids, where if I act engaged, they're going to be thinking I'm weird or something like that. So we didn't get—we were spared that too. Right.
So what were you thinking when you said you've missed?
I mean, it's different for me to have all brothers, so they're naturally friends with each other, and I am kind of. They were a lot closer to my mom friend. And I think it is good if you have more time to be with friends. You can, you know, take a day off of school and hang out with friends, other homeschool friends. And I guess even realizing that even if I wasn't in school, I'm different. So it's not like being homeschooled versus being in that group. I've like I'm more quiet, so I probably would still have the same issue trying to make friends. And I guess I enjoy being friends with older women and college girls, because I'm in lower weight classes, so I'm able to get to know college girls. And I'm teaching piano lessons, so I get to know a different age group. And I think that, like, when you're in school, it tends to be like, okay, they're the 8th graders, we're the high schoolers, we hang out with each other. So I think that is good when you're homeschooled, you can get to know more of your group.
And I think you learn more since the teacher is focused on you. When in the classroom, they're focused on everyone. So in the classroom, you get a more broad, but in homeschooling, you get a really deep focus.
Plus, we're all best in our group.
Erickson was the valedictorian in his graduating class.
Excellent.
How do you like keep your relationships good so they're not just stagnant and you're tired of being around each other all the time? Because I was homeschooled growing up, and I felt like we just were around each other all the time and we're tired of each other.
That's a good question.
And I'm homeschooling my kids now, and so I don't want to have that problem.
You talk about the imaginary?
Yeah, so when we were very little, we had nap time. And mom and dad loved it because they would put us down for nap, but they would go take naps. And so by the time we were too old, or we grew out of naps, or we thought we grew out of naps, we all grew out of naps. They didn't. They were like, okay, we still want our nap, but you guys need to go play quietly. And so they set up a spot for us in our unfinished basement in Colorado, or here, because we're now. And we would just, back when Zoe and I were not napping, we would just have our Legos and dolls and all that stuff. But we'd have audiobooks set up and we just play the whole time. And so as we got older, Churchill started coming and joining. And so we created, just during the time between lunch and then like 3 p.m., just over the years, this time of our, we called it just quiet time. Building Legos, listening to music, listening to audiobooks. And so when we moved to Kentucky, we had a room in the basement that was just all wall-to-wall bookshelves. And so we ended up just making that what we called our Imaginarium, which was Legos everywhere and books and art supplies and audiobooks. And so we just cultivated that space where, okay, everybody's homeschooled, we all get our work done, and then after lunch we go down there and we hang out together. And so even though now Zoe and I are busier, and so we don't have that quite as much, but we still have a spot for, if we're home and we're together, we're going to have that quiet time in the afternoon where the morning work is done and then we can just hang out together, doing our own thing, but still together doing creative stuff.
If we weren't homeschooled, we wouldn't have that time.
Yeah. So that's the other thing, is it's mostly the creative stuff. Like we'll do some on the weekends, but for the most part, it is just the creative stuff of the Legos and the drawing and the
band,
the music,
games.
Games.
But yeah, also having music lessons to have one thing separate from everyone else can be fun.
Oh, you have your own thing.
Having your bits. Yeah. I think in your house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Field trips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's for church house because we have different age categories there.
Yeah. What about being missional? Like, what does it look like, you know, just for, like, families in public school, that is, like,
right.
A big mission field for them. So what does it look like for you guys? It sounds like mom's intentional when she goes to grocery store.
I feel like I have been sheltered and almost got to the point where I'm, like, I can't hang out around believers. And I have felt like I don't have any opportunity and I'm not obeying God. But I think, like, I don't know, I think God, you know, obviously, He's ultimately the one who's going to give me the opportunity. It's not like I have to be intentional. I got to place myself. I know He's going to bring people to me. And I think He, right now, He's just preparing me. Because I don't know if I can be ready to share the gospel yet or, you know, just.
So what are you doing this summer?
I'm going to Philadelphia or with my youth group. I'm going to work kind of in the city, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a big opportunity. And I guess even realizing in church youth group, which I'm really involved in, not all the girls are probably Christian. So that's even an opportunity.
Totally, yeah.
Our friends that have been in and out of public school and other settings, they found that, you know, part of their motivation is that they didn't want their children to be in settings where they would be shaped by being around a mixed group of people and having the opportunity to be witnesses. But they found that, obviously their kids can be shaped by that as well, but that really the period of time that they felt most important for how their children are more likely to be shaped than shaping other people was middle school. And the time they felt their children were at a better position to be salt and light to other people was high school. And so, just for what that's worth, middle school really proves to be such a significant shaping time.
It's the worst.
It really is in a lot of ways. I mean, that's where you really can have a lot of premature curiosity, I mean, premature opening of doors of things that you have the opportunity at home to guide in a more structured way. So for what it's worth, we definitely recognize that missional opportunity, but in terms of where we've heard the most fruit, it seems like high school has proved to be a better opportunity.
Here's a question kind of for both of you guys. So, like, my son, he's kindergarten, he's just now starting to have, like, friends show him video games or pictures on their phones when I'm not around. I told him, you need to ask mom and dad before you look at other people's devices.
Yeah.
But then he doesn't do that, you know. He forgets or he doesn't care or whatever. What do you do to, like, help them when they're not with you to still, like, know what's important, how to guide their decisions and that kind of stuff?
Talk about it with him when he is with you and warn him the way you tell him that the stove is hot, that the internet is hot like that, and talk about Satan who wants to destroy him and talk about how temptation works. Kind of big picture, age-appropriate discussions so that you're equipping him. But also talk to the moms of the kids he's hanging out with. You've got to know what their policies are. I wouldn't send them to play at someone's house if the policy was unfiltered internet access on phones used in bedrooms. No way. And if those kids wanted to come play at our house, they could, but I would have a basket by the front door and say, we just don't have technology anywhere but in this basket when you're here. It's just the house rule. And I think you have the opportunity to be discipling other women, other moms, in those conversations. Even the fact that you have a standard at all can feel shocking to people. It gives you an opportunity to talk about why. And sometimes just holding that mirror up helps them realize the craziness and the folly of what we take into our homes. Churchill, you have this come up some because the kids in the youth group are starting to have phones and stuff. So what do you do?
I just try not to. So it probably also helps not to have a lot of it at home either, and to not even have phones.
Yeah.
And probably just to stay away from them and make friends with other people who don't have technology.
Yeah,
so
that's going to get tricky.
When we were growing up, there weren't a lot of phones.
Right.
So you guys don't have phones.
Yeah.
Smartphones. So do you ever feel like we don't want to give our kids smartphones either? Like they'll have a flip phone.
They're available.
But then I'm like, but if you do that, then are they like more curious? Like, are you like, oh, hey buddy, like can I use your phone whenever? I'm sure you don't call your friends, but like, you know, when you're like with a friend and they have a phone and you don't have a phone, like, do you feel like you're like, hey, can I like use your phone?
No.
What's your approach to purity in technology?
I have a flip phone, and then I have an iPad that's locked down except for the sites that I need, and then a laptop with Covenant Eyes. And I use them when other people are around. I don't use them by myself.
We have been explicit with conversations.
Yes,
and we have
a relationship about it. We talk about it. We have similar approaches to our technology and having all of our phones and all of our devices, which is a ridiculous amount, all plugged in our room at night, and none of them are.
Yeah.
So nobody goes to bed with a phone in their bedroom.
Yeah.
Or an iPad. Or we do, but we're not using them.
Right.
And we have a TV in the basement. We don't pay for TV, so we have rabbit ears, literal, old-fashioned.
It's just kind of a and culture thing.
It is.
We're all together, but then the same rules that they apply to us are what they use for themselves. So it doesn't feel weird.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, I'm just, I mean, we kind of joke about people who are attached to the phones. We kind of see that we don't want to be, there's something about having a smartphone where, for good or evil, I mean, there are good uses with it, but we don't want to be attached to them.
Most of it's a filter iPad we can use. So if we do want to do the technology,
yeah.
And so if they have a legitimate need for it, they can use our phones. I mean, if Harrison's going somewhere and he needs GPS, he just takes my phone.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's, you know, we don't want it to be so secretive that when they leave home, they're like, oh, you don't need to get that. And so having, you want to build the high walls to protect your kids from harm, but you also want to build strong relationships and strong character. It's all of those things working together.
I think it also goes back to that Thessalonians context of relationship, example, and teaching. That they need all of that. So they need the example of what they see you doing with your technology, because that'll be probably the most formative. They need the relationship that's coming in the context of your loving relationship, and actually even you're demonstrating what fun is and what enjoyment is, and that it's not all built around technology or other things, but that it's also in that exhortation to be able to say, we live in a different kind of world, and there are things that are open up to us that are available, temptations that you really had to go out of your way for when we were growing up, that Satan makes so much easier to be available to you. And so we have to, as a family, recognize Satan came to steal and kill and destroy. And we do have an enemy, an adversary, who prowls around like a roaring lion, and he is looking for those opportunities to steal us away. And so we, because of that, we have things in place, and we share that. But we say at the end of the day, no technological solution, no filter, no block, no wall is ultimately going to deal with the heart. And so we have to have both, but to be having conversations about the heart, because that's what's going to last beyond our home. Harrison is 19. We love that he still recognizes there's some benefit in living at home. It's cheaper than living on campus. But we know that it's not going to be long at all before he's out on his own. He's not going to have any of these rules and these restrictions unless he carries them over with his character, with his desire to walk in holiness and purity.
I think the big key too is to think of yourself as building a culture in your home. So it's not, you shouldn't be defined by what you say no to, you should be defined by what you say yes to. The culture you build is defined by what you do spend your time on, how you do fill the sounds and sights in your home, not what you don't have. You know, if you never eat sugar, but you just subsist on cardboard-like food, you're going to despise that rule. But if you never eat sugar, but your mom is a gourmet cook in every other area, you're going to think, oh, those poor people that only eat Twinkies, they've never really eaten. It's like that in all of life. If you never have a video game, and you're bored because you really don't have anything to do, but your parents buy you all these fun dress-up clothes or get them from the Goodwill, and you have regular trips to the library, and you have hundreds
water
of books,
fights.
Water balloon fights.
So excited for
right, and jumping. Steve was jumping on the bed this morning in his shoes. I wanted to share that, and there was no good opportunity. He was playing. It was hilarious. It was like, Dad, buddy.
Because you can jump on the bed in the hotel.
Just not at home. But the point is building a culture of beauty and creativity and ideas and good food and hosting people in your home and good conversations and just a rich texture of life that is good stuff, real stuff. You know, it's really a sweet way to live.
I think one of the big questions we ask is, do we need a phone? Because my cousin got an iPod Touch when she was 12 and I was so jealous, but my parents were helping me see, you don't need it yet. And now I have a childcare job and I have an iPod Touch, which I can use on Wi-Fi, just to text and stuff. But just like, even I'm in Philadelphia this summer, so we're trying to decide how do I contact home.
This is totally apropos of nothing, but I wasn't able to get into this in the discipleship time. Just something I was remembering that we've been able to experience with our kids, the benefit of erring earlier in life on getting big ideas out there, especially big ideas about God, and seeing, we've been able to see the fruit in their lives of knowing truths, learning truths that we didn't come around to until we were 20s and 30s or whatever. And I'd be curious to see if you guys are having this experience in a church that's faithfully teaching the word, and that faithfully teaching the word in your children's programs, if you may even be able to see this too and have the experience of your kids grasping things about God earlier in life than you had the opportunity to, and to see the joy, the fruit of that. And I think it relates to even their character and their choices about technology and purity and other things, is it goes hand in hand with what they're learning about God and what God's doing in their heart. And so there's this one quote, I think this is Ted Tripp, right? Mm-hmm. Who says, it's better to give kids big truths that they'll grow into than to give them small truths that they'll easily grow out of. Yeah. And so this say, in your, because all these are interwoven, they're your relationship with them, your discipline of them, your discipleship, all of those play in together. And so going back to that, in your relationship, your example, and what you're exhorting, all of those relate. And so getting those big ideas, I mean, if you're not to hide this testimony for them, you're to teach the next generation, to teach them in partnership with the church, bring the big ideas. Know that most likely they are ready earlier than you realize for learning the big things about God.
Can you give an example?
So for instance, learning that God is sovereign. That's a big theological idea, but there are ways that you can say, God's the boss. God made everything, and he governs everything, and we can trust him. Just beginning to lay a groundwork. I mean, it is the ministry that I'm a part of, Truth 78, that's what they do in their curriculum, is they recognize, you know, there are different ages that cognitively we're able to learn certain things, but there are foundations that we can lay that you can come back and build on. Actually, in this ministry, what they did is they've got the curriculum that does that at age-appropriate places, but they created devotional books for the family that correspond with that curriculum so that you could use it in the home at that same age-appropriate way. And I did want to just point out one of the resources we have there, that God's Glorious God, Glorious Gospel, really is almost like all of that bundled into one devotional, so that over 15 weeks, you're introducing your kids to who God is, and then you're introducing them to the gospel. And so the first half of that is putting these big ideas out there and doing it in a child-appropriate way. So just to bring up that idea of good theology, good teaching about God goes hand in hand with so many of these heart issues and the discipline issues.
And when things don't go their way, and that'll happen at a really young age, you can talk to them about how they can trust God. He's in charge, even of the hard stuff. And he is always working all the things in your life together for your good if you're trusting him, and encourage them to trust him.
And so the part towards the end of Psalm 78, where it says, so that they'll set their hope in God. The reality is, you know, we started out the conference talking about things we find ourselves depending on and looking to and hoping in. And we have a lot of temptations in life to put our hope in money, our hope in career, our hope in technology, and other things that bring security and help. And our kids will have all of that. They're going to have all kinds of temptations to put their hope in their jobs and put their hope in their efforts or other things. What we want to do is help them to put their hope in God, not even having their hope in us. Ultimately, we're not able to do all that we would like to do for our kids. We're not going to live forever. We're not going to be able to give them all that they need. And we also need to give them that anchor, that unshakable hope that can handle reversals in life, serious health challenges, tragedies, disappointments in life, and that can handle some serious successes. I mean, some of the most challenging things that can happen to your children is to be wildly successful in life and to not be prepared for the temptations that creates in their work, and to fall away from God because they weren't prepared to handle a windfall of money or a windfall of admiration or success. And so cultivating that hope in God.
Can that Harrison, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So just to follow up on that. So we've done a lot of kind of family devotionals. I can't think of any that we've actually gotten the whole way through. So I think probably the most impactful thing for me wasn't necessarily the scripted stuff, although we did a lot of things that really benefited me, but seeing how you guys react in situations of life where you say God is sovereign, but then you act like it. And then when things happen, when job situation changes or something hard happens, and seeing how you respond is the most impactful thing. Not necessarily, so you say it, you present it, but then living it out is the thing that strikes home deeper than reading it before we go to bed. Because a lot of that, it's there, it goes there, but it's not necessarily front and center. It's when you guys live it out, and then that clicks with what you play is what makes the greatest impact. So saying it, but then living it out is probably where you make the biggest difference.
That was my question.
Okay.
With what makes the biggest difference in deciding that you want to follow Jesus, like what in your helmet? I hear you saying that it's the example that's set, not necessarily something, but just actually watching it being moved out. So, okay, that's a big pressure right here. I'll go work on that.
But then the gospel in weakness.
Forget the resources.
Corinthians and all this stuff, with my mom, that's what it was like. She did it perfectly. It was in her, looking to Jesus and dependence and repentance.
Yeah. Going to the laundry room and then repenting, right?
Yeah.
Those two things.
Yes, right.
I wrote them down.
Yes. But I think that's it. It's like, and that's what the gospel is. It's the glory of our weakness is God.
Yeah, so it's not just living it out, but it's when you don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talking about it, saying, guys, we blew it.
Yeah.
We're sorry. We need the same grace you did.
And I will say, we've been steeped in too much programming and tactics from different places we've worked, we have tried a lot of things. I mean, Harrison's talking about things we didn't finish. We tried a lot of different type things. And I'll be honest, I think there was even some self-righteousness of, we're using all the tools and tactics and techniques, and we can become dogmatic about that, and feel like God's humbled us to realize that he's makes things, I mean, different families and different approaches, and there's a lot that falls within what's orthodox and what pleases and honors God. And so we really want to be careful not to be dogmatic about homeschool versus public school and how you use your quiet time, whether or not you do sports or music or other things. But more than anything, say God has given us the great privilege of our example, of our affection, and of what we actually teach, what we exhort, what we make important. And all those things are at work, whether we're being intentional with our example, or they're learning from an example we didn't mean to send, or whether we are failing to tie what we believe to our affection and them receiving it in a meaningful relationship, or even on exhorting. Ultimately, I mean, I was making the case, our kids need to hear it from our mouths, not just from our pastors, not just from our Sunday school teachers. They need to know if this is really, if we believe this as well. But even that context of exhorting means to communicate what's really important. And I stopped to think about that, and I realized, what are the things I've said with urgency to my kids that if at the end of their life they would say, Dad always said, Would it be, Dad always said, never leave your Legos on the floor, because that's what I said with the most exclamation marks. That's what I made the most clear. Or was it trust the Lord and follow Him, seek after Him with all your heart and soul? And to realize if what we show the most urgency about, it's like I look back on my dad and I'm thinking, you know, he was a pastor. He did teach a lot. I think sometimes he wanted us to just catch it from the pulpit, not always was, he did a lot of things right, but I think sometimes what he exhorted us to was, don't leave my tools in the rain. Mm-hmm. You know, that it's stuff that really wasn't necessarily eternal. So I started thinking about it in the context of what would we want, you know, to write in a kid's book. You know, if we were to give them a book and write, hey, don't ever forget. Because I've heard so many stories of people who say, I still cherish what my dad wrote in this book, don't ever forget. And don't just limit that to maybe an opportunity to write in a card, in a book. Those things are important. But to get those into the vocabulary of your home, say those things. Don't let the, I'm tired of stepping on your Legos, don't leave them out, don't leave my tools in the rain, whatever, be what really comes across as what you exhort. Does that make sense? It's kind of a different thought, but...